All right, everyone, this is a conversation with Pierre Farragut. Pierre is a founder of New Street Research. He's one of the top Wall Street analysts, and he covers Tesla, the autonomous space, the AI space very closely. And in this conversation that we had on Tuesday, the week after Tesla's Robotaxi unveil with the Cybercab, the Tesla bot, and the van, we had a very interesting discussion around the potential of Tesla bot being a lot closer than most people think, given some of the things that he saw at the event. Pierre was at the event. He got to see the bot up close. He got to interact with it. And this conversation was really eye-opening for me because it helped me understand what the actual value proposition is for the Tesla bot. And so for those that are interested in the robotic space, in the AI space, in the Tesla space, I think this is going to be a very eye-opening conversation. And so without further ado, let's go ahead and listen to the spaces with Pierre, myself, and Hans Nelson.
What's fascinating is that Tesla got to that level of development with a very simple build, like the hardware of the robots is actually very, very simple. And so the fact that they've been able to achieve that level of motion control, balance control, purely with software and leveraging the FSD software, I thought was fairly impressive. So I left the party thinking I would take the bet that Tesla is going to sell 1 million Optimus before they sell or deploy 1 million Cybercabs, maybe, because Optimus started like very recently, but they are making very fast progress. And I think the robots are not very far from being deployable, because you could be a nightclub and buy a robot to have a dancing robot in your nightclub. You could have be like a luxury hotel and have a robot as a bartender, or like holding the door for guests and things like that. And then, of course, in factories, you could have like very simple jobs being operated by these robots relatively rapidly. So we'll have to see. But as much as I remain cautious on the pace at which the Cybercabs can be deployed and how they can be deployed, I would say that Optimus is progressing faster than what most people would have thought.
I would have to agree that the Optimus robot is farther along than I think a lot of people expected. But what also stood out to me was how comfortable Tesla was with the liability of putting either fully automated or semi-automated systems, in the case of Optimus, I would argue a prototype that if something were to go wrong, potentially could be catastrophic, very similar to the car. God forbid this thing barrels through a crowd, or if the Optimus robot falls on somebody and causes some sort of injury or harm. Tesla seemed very comfortable allowing these systems to just be around a lot of people. One of the biggest things, barriers for this kind of technology, is safety. Like, the last thing you want is something to go wrong where the regulators or media or whatever steps in and basically derails your progress because something catastrophic has happened. Rightfully so in a lot of cases, right? So what's your read there? Is that something that we should even pay attention to? Or is this like one of those things where we get over-optimistic about Tesla's progress and then we end up feeding this machine of over-promise, under-deliver? How do you view that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And one side of me wants to say, yes, you're right, it's amazing. And the other side of me wants to warn you about reading that correctly. For Optimus to be deployable in a crowd, you would probably need it to be like several hundred of thousands of fires in a crowd without creating any harm, any problem, any embarrassing situation. And similarly, for Robotaxi to really deliver a ride-sharing service in a city, each car would probably need to be close to 1 million hours, or if you want, 1 million miles between critical required interventions or between incidents. And so like a night in a very safe environment, a studio set with a couple of thousand people, a few dozen cars, and a dozen or two droids statistically don't represent much. So you can't read that as, oh, they've made massive progress towards deployment. But what you can read is the mindset in which these guys are working. I love this quote from Elon, which is something along the lines of optimism, pessimism, or fuck that, let's just do it. So that's the spirit that transpired in this party. Like, that was a party of let's just do it. And these robots are absolutely not ready for mass deployment. These Cybercabs are not ready for mass deployment. But we feel totally comfortable throwing a giant party with dozens of these hanging around. And so don't take me wrong, each Optimus was surrounded by four or five competent Tesla employees, so who really were usually like R&D engineers and things like that. the boarding and offloading of each robotaxi was also very carefully supervised in a way by employees. The crew was extremely careful. There were like hundreds of people from Tesla on duty that evening to make sure that everything happens well. But I haven't seen or haven't heard about any incident. So that's great. But that doesn't mean the road isn't still long before you get to a point where you can deploy not in a studio site, but in a city or in a factory. That being said, again, the road ahead of us is much shorter, I think, for Optimus than for the Cybercab, because you can deploy Optimus in a very restrained environment relatively easily. The Cybercab, once it is deployed, like that's in a city. So it's there are very, actually, no possible controls.
That's a very interesting point. I think the one big debate that arose after the event was, at least for those of us that were looking from afar, was folks were making a deal out of the obvious teleoperation of the Optimus robot in a lot of different use cases. But I think the interesting thing there, that even if the bot in this use case, and I don't know if this is 5 years out, 10 years out, 2 years out, I don't know what the timeline is. But something that clicked for me after the event was, man, even in a case where Optimus is halfway autonomous, and it's even, let's just say, using simple algorithms or complex algorithms to drive repetitive motions and sort of actions and whatnot, you can all of a sudden multiply you can leverage human labor 5-to-1, 10-to-1. You can have one guy that's in charge of, they have their VR headset on and their whatever, the things that they use to remote control this Optimus. And then anytime the Optimus runs into an issue, the teleoperator gets a message and they correct the behavior. And then that becomes data that Tesla uses from an exception perspective to feed it into the neural net to account for those situations. And you just continually scale that up over time. Is that how you view the first like use cases for this thing? I would love to pick your brain on that, because I think I agree with you that the mass manufacturing of the bot getting to 1 million units feels closer than robotaxi. I would love to pick your brain more on that bot piece.
Yes. If you recall our conversation of last week, like before the event, on the robotaxi, my framework is you have three critical milestones to achieve before you can see millions of robotaxis being deployed. The first one is unsupervised, which is really just a game of pushing the limit of what is being done today. And if you are like in the tens or maybe the hundreds of hours between critical interventions, we need to get to closer to 1 million on the log scale to get there. And it's very uncertain, but we probably know the process to get there. So it's just a matter maybe of being stubbornly patient and hardworking on the matter. Then once you have that, you need to figure out how you make your technology robotaxi capable. So that's like really the mission delivery. Being able to pick up people, drop them off without putting a mess in town and knowing that there would be hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of cars like you around in any circumstance, and then deal with any unexpected events during a ride. And I think it's another challenge. And it's, you will be able to drive your Tesla unsupervised and really read a book and watch a movie while the car is driving, but you'll still have a lot of work because you can actually do that in a car without a steering wheel and you're just a client. And then last but not least, there is this element of scale out, like breaking away from what robotaxi is today. You look at the Waymo fleets, they take us in years, get deployed and are still very partially deployed. They still have, even if they is doing 100,000 rides a week, they are still very far from replacing labor, from re-delivering rides in circumstance. So the way I would put it is maybe the droid is far behind the car FSD in terms of autonomy, because the autonomy of FSD is unbelievable. It's like crazy to see how well the car drives, and you just need to intervene once in a while. The droid is definitely not there yet. And so the droid is not going to take over the Cybercab and get more autonomous and fully autonomous unsupervised before. But the great advantage of the droid is that once it becomes reasonably autonomous, let's say, the way FSD is today, the way the car is today, which means you need to give a hand to the droid every 10 hours or something like that once a day, then you have tons of use cases that make sense in a factory, in a hotel, in a nightclub, in a restaurant, at home. Like when I came back, the first thing my kids asked me was, well, are you going to buy it? One, when it's available. And I said, yes, of course, yes. And they were like, wow, we're going to have a droid
at home. It's going to be so fun.
And so, I mean, you get to a million faster this way, I feel, than figuring out that the robotaxi capable milestone and the scale out milestone for robotaxi.
That's incredibly interesting. Hans, did you want to jump in here before I hop here for the rest of the space?
Yeah, I love this. I love this conversation because I have strong thoughts in both directions, but I really do actually agree on the fact that there are just so many different potential use cases for Optimus that, like, we don't have to solve the software problem to near perfection before there is a commercial use case, that the bar for commercially useful and viable is low. And because of that, there are lots of things. While the vision that Elon painted through this event on 1010 was of the ultimate endpoint of humanoid robotics, where they're able to be your friend almost and carry on a conversation with you and do general things around in any environment, that challenge is orders of magnitude more difficult challenge to solve than just full self-driving. And it's going to be a long, bumpy, difficult road from here to there. But there are so many economically useful and viable verticals between here and there that can make the business case for Optimus just incredibly powerful before we have that general solution to AGI in a humanoid form factor. And I think the metric that feels like potentially the most important metric to track is, like, you can almost think of an overhead in headcount per FSD vehicle that, you know, right now it's supervised by at least one driver plus whatever the overhead that you want to say is in Tesla's engineering firm. And there's something similar for robots. If they want to, right now, for example, they have at least one, potentially more Optimus robots working on the cell line there in what I'm assuming is not Lathrop, but the other facility where they have the test production for 4680s. But how many engineers does it take to support that one Optimus bot doing that job, especially for a whole shift? How many times do they have to come in and intervene? Is it a programmer and some support personnel? There's a scenario where you could have potentially 10 extremely highly paid staff members that are responsible for babysitting this robot in its current task today, doing the work that it does. And effectively, Tesla's paying way more for that task to get done than they would pay if a human was there doing it. But that is on some sort of a learning rate, and it's getting cheaper. They're having to intervene less. They're able to reduce the number of humans that are involved in doing whatever, whether it's data collection or whether it's interventions or whatever. And I think that's the determining factor when you couple that with what are the use cases that you can make a lot of money on. If you can have one person per five robots or one person per 10 robots, as soon as you pass that one person per robot, it is essentially leverage that forces a self-reinforcing feedback loop that just accelerates the progress of Optimus robots to an almost unfathomable degree.
I think I agree with you, Hans, and I would add one thing, and let me go a bit wild on this one. When the first Tesla I had was one of the first Model X, it was really cool, like this feeling of really getting into the future, like with the butterfly doors and lots of automation. And one of the features of the Model X that I find amazing is that when you get close to the car, the door opens. And if you come from the front, it's going to open slightly, wait for you to pass the door, and then it's going to open fully. And if you come from the back, it opens fully directly. Okay? And here is a kind of thing that happens when you have like just a smart object behavior, like a simple reptilian object behavior like that. I would get into my garage, come by my car, and hope it would click and open and welcome me. And I'm being serious here. It created a bit of an affinity between myself and my car, to the point that when I was walking by the car, seeing the door opening and then closing back because I was walking away, I felt like my car was sad because I wasn't taking her for a walk, basically. And that's like a real experience. And I'm sure like it happens to a lot of people. I'm the only one to dare to say it. And so once you start having objects around you that have like movements that you can attribute, that to which you can make correspond emotional states and actually consciousness, then suddenly you start seeing that object as something conscious. And so it happened to me with a car that could open and close a door, and that's it. Now, if you think about what consciousness is, it's exactly that. The only consciousness about is yours. That's cogito ergo sum. And then the consciousness of others, it's only a hypothesis you're making. It's, I know what being conscious is based on my own personal experience. Like I think, therefore I am. And then I'm having a chat with Hans and Farzad. So my best bet is that these guys must be the same as me and they must have a conscience that way as well. But I have absolutely zero evidence of your conscience. It's a bet. It's a bet I make on you being humans, the way I am a human. Okay? And that means a lot. It means our experience of consciousness, the consciousness of others, is only based on observed behaviors. And so I can tell you that when you play rock, paper, scissor with an Optimus bot, you connect with the bot very rapidly. And the fact that the bot is moving in a very human way, and you can see the neck moving, the head moving, like very simple head movements related to emotion, I think we will connect with bots extremely rapidly. And so I agree with your framework, Hans. Basically, I think what you're saying is it might be very expensive to roll out these bots initially, but everybody will do it because everybody will understand it's a good investment. And then at some point, it will become economically viable and it will go wide. But I think the point I make when I'm saying there could be a million bots on the factory floor in our house before we have a million cyber cabs on our streets is because we are going to pay the price for the bots, because we are going to develop an emotional relationship to the bots. We are going to like having bots around. People will love getting like a door being opened by the bots instead of like a sliding door and thing like that. And I suspect there would be way more value in that than what is being anticipated today.
That is such an interesting point. And I almost feel like that's impossible to convey unless, or to really explain how powerful that is, unless you are actually there with the bot and actually it responds to you. You respond to it. You have a back and forth. And it's, would you agree with that? I feel like that's, for me, even hearing you say it, it sounds very exciting. And I'm trying to imagine in my head, I'm like, wow, that would be like pretty insane to actually have some sort of relationship, however surface level it might be, some sort of relationship with a what I assume would be an unconscious object. But if it's going to perform in a way that makes me feel happy, like how the Model X does with you, Pierre, I feel like you can't really understand that unless you experience it for yourself. Is that a fair statement to make?
Yes, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's so fascinating. Do you think the thesis of the bot being employed by Tesla first and rolling it out, is that, and again, timelines are so hard, so I almost don't want to even ask this question. So maybe I'll just say how I'm thinking about this, and I'm curious to get your take. If I think about rollout of this bot over the long term, even Elon and Tesla said that they're going to start using this internally first. And because of its ability to be teleoperated, the use cases, even in Tesla's own supply chain and manufacturing verticals, whatever you want to call it, just a simple task of moving stuff from point A to point B, which is so integral to manufacturing, but especially so for supply chain, being having worked in the supply chain for most of my career, that companies will pay $15 to $20 an hour for humans to just move stuff from one place of the warehouse to another. And that seems like such a simple use case for the bot to be helpful with. And then Tesla, as a manufacturer, as a supply chain company of sorts, if you really think about it, they're going to have so many different use cases for this bot. And I wonder, is that going to be like a year time frame? Is it going to be a 2-year time frame for them to start getting a few bots up and running and getting them useful and collecting the data? And then maybe by 2027, 2028, we start seeing other companies, maybe Tesla. One of the things I thought about is, I mean, even if Tesla just offers these things for free to companies as a pilot program and they just collect the data, I feel like that would be worth it for them. But knowing Tesla, if you think about how they rolled out their cars, they sold the cars to customers, they sold FSD to customers, and then customers collected the data for Tesla to make unsupervised FSD. So Tesla has become extremely good at monetizing on the way to full development. Is that how you view the rollout for the bot in the next 3 to 5 years? I would love to hear your thoughts there.
Yeah, I think Elon said that next year, if I recall correctly, they will roll out like a few thousand bots in their own factories. The thing is that there won't be a regulator or anyone or a mayor, like angry pedestrian, blocking that. So I think it's going to happen. I think Tesla will have thousands, like maybe 1,000 of a few in the high hundreds bots in their factory doing stuff. And I think, as Hans described, this is going to be expensive to run these bots. But the investment is a no-brainer, right? It's like you're getting your technology ready. And as they do that, they will start showing up stuff that doesn't really make sense economically yet. Like, you have to pay the bot, let's say, $50,000. And then you almost need like a supervisor per bird. So it's a waste of money. But who is not going to be willing to try? Who is not going to be willing to try? And suddenly, Elon will be like, okay, it's summer. I'm having a moment. I'm opening like the reservation for the bird. And you can order your bird for $250 and you can get on the list. And 3 months down the line, Tesla says, oh, we have 500,000 orders for the button today. And that becomes a big topic. And they start a production line and they do 10,000 bots, because if Tesla is using a couple thousand bots internally, you realize that they have 1,000 clients who want to have maybe between 1 and 20 to get started and to climb the learning scale as well. And so my view is that you'll get into significant numbers before the bot is justified economically, because there will be this aspect of people think it's cool, people think it's a future, people think they have to learn how to use it. And I think there will be a lot of freaks like me who will think just having a bot around is cool.
You get a sense of how much of the crowd were potential customers for the bot? Were you able to get an idea, CEOs, directors, executives from other companies that would benefit from these technologies? Were you able to gather any of that while you were there?
No, not at all. No, okay. I didn't even think of it. I was partying, so.
Yeah, I don't blame you. How do you view the competition in the space? We have like Figure. We have a bunch of Chinese companies. We have Boston Dynamics and a bunch of other startups. How well-versed are you in this space? How much research have you done when it comes to these robotics? I would love to hear your thoughts on where Tesla is versus the competition. Because I almost want to say, who cares if there's competition? The TAM for this thing is so stupid. You could allow 1,000 companies to operate in the space and all of them would win. How do you view that?
So first of all, I'm not super deep in like the droid space and the robotics space outside of Tesla. So I don't know inside out everybody, and I will do that one day probably with the team, but we haven't really spent time on that much in terms of research. My opinion is going to be more like conceptual and high level. So number one is, I have seen the trajectory of Boston Dynamics and others, and the time it has taken them to get where they are today. And I just compare the slope of that trajectory to Tesla. And I'm like, they can't compete. Like, Tesla is being extremely fast. And exactly the same as for the electric car, Tesla started the project, specifically the birds, on like affordability on not like putting everything you can into making a droid that can jump, but putting all the intelligence you can and all the software you can and all the processing power you can in order to make like a $25,000 bot reality. And I think that very different approach, I haven't seen that being being copied by others. And I think it's building up as a very strong competitive advantage. So the pace of execution of Tesla, their starting point, I think are very strong competitive advantages. And then in addition to that, I am a great believer in motion being the source of intelligence. I think when you observe a baby, the first thing a baby can do is to move the head around and they keep looking the head around. And I think the way the brain works is that like synaptic connections are being built as the brain of the baby figures out the correspondence between what one eye is looking and the other eye is looking and what a pair of eyes are looking now versus a few seconds ago. And then the correspondence between what the eyes are looking and what you can see with your hands or like the movements you make with your hands in front of your face, et cetera, et cetera. And so I really believe that movements and like vision together are like the absolute fundamentals of the way our cortex works. And what you've seen in the very, very fast process of the Optimus, the fact that almost like the first prototype was already capable of moving around and perceiving the world around it and catching stuff, etc., to me means that the synergies between the cyber cab and the droid are insane, but in much, much deeper than sharing the same chip and the same model and things like that. I think very deep into the billions of weights of the neural networks you have in FSD, you have the secrets of motion control. And that's the reason why we had like dancing droids like crazy. And the reason why the team at Tesla felt safe having these droids hanging around amongst us.
Do you want to go ahead? Oh, sorry, Pierre, go ahead. Yeah. Sorry. I meant to interrupt. Go ahead.
So maybe I'm wrong, but I still like checking the competition is not on very high on my list of priorities. I'm not too worried to be honest. I'll have a look one day, of course.
Yeah, the only thing that I was going to point out was I pinned a post here to the top of the space that Steve Jurvetson had made, and it illustrates that point that you were making, Pierre, about the pace of innovation, the Optimus robot compared to other players in the industry. And Steve was comparing the cost reduction of payload to orbit for the rest of the industry and then SpaceX. And you can see the different slopes of the different lines, the red line and the green line there on a logarithmic plot. So this is SpaceX making access to space exponentially cheaper at a much, much faster rate than the entire rest of the space industry combined. And I think that there is a similar dynamic that is going to be at play for Optimus robots. And this is just a quick visual that people can look at to understand the dynamics that you're talking about.
Yes, exactly. That's the kind of slope on which I see Tesla is on the humanoid robots. Exactly. Completely agree with you.
Given that I assume you talk to a bunch of other folks that do research and analysis in this space, how much interest is there in this robotic space, maybe not even just specifically Tesla, but from other companies? Is this still a nascent, novel industry that people are still trying to get their heads wrapped around? Are they waiting to see which players are starting to show a lot of promise? What are the conversations like that you're having with other folks?
Definitely not center stage. I think it's still, I don't think people are thinking, I don't know anyone who is today thinking deployment of humanoid robots. For now, like the focus in robotics is more like on specialized robots and like automation and getting, I would say, the traditional non-humanoid assembly line robots smarter, more flexible, more capable with better motion control. But like the kind of like crazy call, which is we've created factories for us. So if we want a robot to really do a good job at replacing us, it has to be humanoid. That's still one of Elon's moonshot, and I don't think anybody is there yet. Like the only people you've seen there yet and working on it are people like Boston Dynamics, who are more working on how to replace a human in like a dangerous or painful or uncomfortable use case, but not really let's replace a human by a droid because it's going to be cheaper and better.
So I think we're still very far from that.
Got it. Okay, we have about 10 minutes left on the space. If there's anyone in the audience that would like to come up and ask a question for Pierre, go ahead and hit that request button. I would greatly appreciate that. And then maybe the thing we haven't talked about yet while people request is the giant toaster on wheels that they unveiled in the van. I would love to get your thoughts there. The way I view it is that I don't think this thing is going to come out this decade. I think this is a 2030s type project once autonomy is figured out and there's a much more defined regulatory framework, maybe at the federal level even, but it's probably not as well going to be at the state still, where you can allow something like this. And then in the long term, I view this as a airline model type solution where Tesla can just sell the shells. And then fleet managers can outfit them however they want for each use case. Because you have so much room, the use cases for this thing are going to be plentiful. And given that, because there's going to be so many plentiful use cases, it seems difficult for Tesla to come up with a manufacturing system to account for all of those. So they'll just offload that on fleet managers. I would love to get your take on the van and what you saw and what you think about it.
Well, that's interesting, actually. Yeah, I don't know why we forgot to talk about that. But I would actually be almost on the exact opposite of where you stand for that, which is that remember the reason why I'm like cautious on robotaxi is mission delivery and scale out. It is difficult to get a robotaxi on the streets of a town, picking up and dropping off people from anywhere to anywhere at any time. Now, if you're telling me it's going to be a robotized bus or tramway that is going on dozens of routes, but always stop and drop off and pick up in pre-established stops and stations and areas, then it becomes a much, much easier problem to solve. So what I would tell you is that the day FSD becomes unsupervised, I think you can roll out autonomous bus the next morning. It's a very easy rollout. You decide a route, you have like your bus going on the route, you have one supervisor for the route, and you have cameras to keep an eye on what's happening. The way people get on board and get off board is very easily codified and very easy to control. And the thing is very safe day one. And it never drives much faster than within a city, like 30 miles an hour and whatever. And the sales pitch for a city council is pretty straightforward. Your city is going to look like badass with these toasters on wheels hanging around all over the place. So I wouldn't be surprised to see these things finding their market and scaling faster than the robotaxi. Of course, the commercial opportunities, the scale of deployment is never going to be in the millions, like tens of millions as robotaxi could be, but it could actually go faster.
That's actually, I didn't think about that because bus type routes already are predetermined, buses almost never go outside their usual route, then you can overfit the autonomous system to account for that in the van to the point where you're going to get 5 sigma level safety on that route specifically. And then anytime, okay, wow. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Huh. All right.
And I don't know if you guys have ever traveled to Russia, but in Russia, you have a common transportation scheme that is very common in any large city that is called the taxi route. And so the taxi route is basically a very small bus that goes across the city, and you have 20, 30, 50, 100 different routes. And they have stops actually like every 300 meters. It's super cheap. Everybody uses it. And it is as convenient as a taxi because you can pick it almost everywhere. It can drop you off almost everywhere, but it's just constrained by staying on specific routes. And the magic of it is that if you need to be dropped off between two stops, you can actually ask the driver to drop you off. And if it's safe, the driver drops you off. And if it's not like practical, you're anyway dropped off like 100 yards down the line or down the route. And so you could imagine like an autonomous taxi route being deployed, and it would be, as you said, you would get to the five sigma much, much earlier than a general purpose taxi. So you could see these deployments actually happening faster.
That's fascinating. I didn't think about that. That's super, super interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. And it's, and I guess from that standpoint, it limits the use case only to that, obviously, whereas if it was more general, even with cargo, you could theoretically set something up like this, where maybe a company wants to ship product from one place to another. You could always predefine routes for it, get the data for it, overfit and deploy. That's going to be a lot more complex. I guess, would it be more complex? I don't know.
No, yeah, I think it's thing as well. Yeah, because you, if you have the route, yeah, I guess you're right. That if you do like deliveries, you could probably do autonomous deliveries. I think
like UPS, right? UPS.
Yeah,
is not gonna,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like picking up and dropping off passenger, I think will be the holy grail of autonomous driving. It's going to be the more difficult use case. And so when there was this like rumors about McDonald's being part of the event October 10th, etc., I was like, you know what? It's not silly, because maybe it's not that difficult for McDonald's to have a partnership with Tesla and deploy a few cars. We do a few deliveries because it's like easier to manage than really offering ride sharing, like fully fledged ride sharing. So any use case that gives you a bit of, that narrows a bit the space, is going to get you to five sigma faster. And I think it's going to be worth considering. And you will see, I know the crazy optimism and pragmatism of Musk and the whole Tesla organization. Once they have a car that is basically super unsupervised, once the technology is there or approaching, they will figure out ways to deploy them on restricted use case. And you will see all what we've just discussed, like dedicated routes, replacing a bus, doing deliveries, in some circumstances is probably going to take off before like actual passenger personal transportation.
So one quick question that I had before we leave this topic is we've seen the patents for wireless charging and the automatic cleaning, but I was curious if the presentation where Elon highlighted both the wireless charging and the automatic cleaning, if those have an impact one way or the other on your view on the scalability of whether it's the RoboVan platform that we've been talking about in the constrained environment just now, or for the CyberCab.
So automated cleaning, I don't know. It's getting a robot to replace like probably the least expensive labor. It's probably going to be a challenge. The good thing is that it's not on the critical path. Hence, if the only problem you have left to solve is cleaning up the cars regularly, I'm happy to get that organized for you. It's going to be easy. So I think the cleanup is not a big deal. The wireless charging, of course, is a major factor of, it helps a lot as a deployment. I never thought about it before I saw the short videos Elon showed. And it's true that once you have these fleets, you'll organize areas in the city, indoor or outdoor, where they'll have to recharge. And the cars will have to go back to these places quite regularly to recharge, probably. Maybe not once a day, but not very far from once a day. And in rare occasions, maybe more than once a day. And so having this underground, non-intrusive technology and avoiding having the mechanical hands plugging in the car, doing the handshake, etc., which is probably quite challenging, is very, it's going to help scaling out faster. I can imagine when you see how fast Tesla can roll out superchargers for human drivers, they're going to be able to roll out like wireless charging stations at the same pace with the same operational and financial efficiency. And it's going to help. And yeah, awesome.
All right. I know you have a two coming up here, so I don't want to keep you for too much longer. I'll give you just a couple minutes to share your last words. Apologies to the folks in the crowd. We got a couple of people come up, but I know we're running out of time. So go ahead and maybe give us your parting thoughts and then let people know where people can find your research and anything else you'd like to talk about.
Yes, absolutely. So thanks, Hans and Charlotte, for having me twice in such a short period of time. Always a pleasure to chat with you guys. to everybody, my parting thoughts on Tesla would be my opinion on the robotaxi is really going beyond the believer and non-believer debates. Yeah. I think it's, yes, you can get very excited and believe in the vision, and yes, you can be very pessimistic and claim it's never going to happen on a reasonable time frame. I love Elon's mantra, fuck that, let's just do it. And I would say, I want to have a similar perspective in my research. And now the research we're doing is, we know what like the milestones are between us and large scale robotaxi deployments. We know that once we are on the other side of this, milestones, Tesla is probably worth like $5 trillion in terms of market cap, just like the robotaxi and the car business and the energy storage business. So there is a huge upside opportunity. So it might take 10 years, it might take a very long time, or we might actually never get there really, like that the robotaxis will continue to be very challenging to deploy in very large scale for the next 15, 20 years. But what's for certain is that seeing the company being all in, going in that direction is very exciting and is going to deliver a lot of value one way or another. And so it's very, very exciting and very encouraging. And on Sunday morning, when I woke up, I was thinking this robotaxi thing, it's really never going to work. There are so many practical hurdles going against scaling them out. And then I saw the mega booster flying back into the chopping sticks. And I was like, if they can do that, maybe they can get the cyber taxi, the cyber cab right as well. So it's going to be fascinating to watch Tesla moving along that direction. And when they get there and whether they ever get to the final stage doesn't really matter. What matters is that they keep making progress in that direction. And that's going to be really like a great pleasure to see that over the next few years.
Yeah, it's so fascinating to think about. It's like within a 72-hour period, the singular person in his company's unveiled human or robots that can talk and play with you, self-driving cars with a steering wheel pedal, and a freaking rocket landing on a tower. It's okay. I guess it is good at this. We should probably pay attention at the very least. Thank you, Pierre, so much. Always a pleasure. You're always welcome to come back and chat with us, obviously. Make sure you go check out Pierre's research firm at New Street Research. He does great work. Make sure to post some links under the space here. And we'll be posting this as well as an improved audio segment as well later on today to tweak some of the stuff that happened in the background. So look out for that. So thank you, Pierre. Always a pleasure. I look forward to speaking to you again, man. Thank you so much for making the time for us.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
All right. Bye, everybody.